you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
All right, guys, before we start today's show, you know, here at Part of the Problem, we want you to have amazing sex. We'd like you to have amazing sex, which is why I want to tell you about a popular sexual enhancer, the Promescent Delay Spray, that's been used by over a million men and is clinically proven to help you last longer in bed. It takes the edge off and sensitivity levels down, so you don't have to worry about finishing too soon. No prescriptions, no mess, no pesky subscriptions required. Just better sex, guaranteed with a 60-day money-back policy. It's easy to use, it'll help you last longer, and it'll give you more confidence. See what the buzz is all about for yourself. Grab a bottle along with all of your sexual wellness products, from specifically formulated arousal gels to supplements and more, in one trusted spot that ships fast and discreet. Go to promescent.com, no promo code needed, as they're offering free shipping with a 60-day money-back guarantee. One more time, that's promescent.com. They've got an assortment of products to enhance your sex life. Go check them out today at promescent.com. All right, let's start the show.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens. Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders. If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now.
Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. The dynamic duo is back. We have with us the great Michael Malice, troll extraordinaire, author, podcaster, and perhaps the most based human being on the planet. What's up, brother?
Most basic.
I'm sorry. Did that come out wrong? Did I slur that?
The most basic human being on the planet. Yeah, I am. Greetings from the Republic of Texas. How are things back in that shithole of a former state that I used to live in? Is it as bad as I think?
You really are a rootless cosmopolitan. Just all this all out there in Texas. Oh, hello. I'm a Texan. Just wanted to check in on you, lonely Jews out in New York. Ooh, you turncoat. it's everything you thought. I mean, I don't know. It's what life is, right? It's the last 18, 19 months have been a great lesson in the external versus the internal and what really matters in your world. But yes, the external world is completely crazy.
Have like the subways gotten worse, even worse since I left?
Well, you know, I'm out of the fucking, you know, heart of the city.
But you talk to the plebs. Have they been telling you this?
I do. I talk to, it's true. I have daily meetings with them. I don't know this, you know, I haven't been on a subway. God, and I've been in the city a lot, but I haven't been on a subway since March of 2020.
Okay.
So I don't know. It just seems like my vibe in the city was just kind of like, yeah, I'm going to Uber.
Yeah.
Right now. This seems like an Uber time. So I don't know. That's an interesting question that I haven't asked. I will say that I was back in the city for a bit
when my boy was first born and going through the surgery and all that stuff. And it was, there was something cool about it, you know, but it was so depressing. The outdoor masking was just bananas and driving me crazy. And I would take my daughter to the playground in the Upper West Side, and there'd be kids masked in the playground. And the parents would look at you like you're an asshole for not masking your three-year-old.
If you don't have COVID, you can't spread COVID. They do not understand this. That was from Lou Perez. Credit to the great Lou Perez. They don't understand this.
Yeah.
And remember last year how we were wiping down literally everything, and now we're not doing that. So should we have done it before? And if we should have done it before, why aren't we doing it now?
Yes, that's a very good point. And there's several things like that, but I think the much bigger one is lockdowns.
Oh yeah,
like,
of course.
It's like, well, if lockdowns made sense then, and you're masking outdoors, why should we not be locking down? Why are all these non-essential workers still going to work? Or was there at least a cost to that? Was there something that is not, eternally sustainable to locking down the economy? Why are we not even talking about that? Or they just move the goalposts.
And very quietly, those social distancing stickers are being removed from the floors at all different stores.
Yes.
Very quietly. So why did we do it then? If we should have done it then, we should be doing it now. Delta variant.
Dude, I saw it's so funny, dude. So this was at the children's hospital where I was, but they have these big elevators. So I was basically like kind of living there for a few weeks, and they have these big elevators, and they have in the elevator, like big for an average elevator, but not big. And they have stickers of where you should stand. But you're a foot and a half at most away from the other person. It makes no sense whatsoever. Like, you stand here, you stand here, you stand here. Like, what are we doing? Is it, we're in a box, in a tiny little box with a bunch of people who, like, if someone, I don't know, it's just all, there's so much just insanity that persists to this day.
The only time I have to wear a mask is when I get my Ubers here. That's it.
And that's still in the Ubers.
Right.
And now, can I ask you, do they actually care or not?
I don't know if both of us are like lying to each other, because a lot of times, like, because if I have my gym bag or something, I'll put the mask on as I'm leaving the house, so I don't have to fiddle with it. So like, they'll see me with the mask, so then they'll put it on. But I don't know if that's that they wanted it or they think I want it. So it's a whole kind of like a prisoner's dilemma situation.
Right. It's an interesting kind of social experiment to get in without the mask. I've noticed that out here where I am, not in New York City, but out in Red Town, Jersey. You just get in without it. And almost always, I mean, I'd say 98% of the time, they don't care. And I've even had a few times where I'll hold the mask in my hand and get in with it, and they'll go, dude, you don't need a.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That. And then you're kind of like, okay, yep, thank you.
I'm going to stop wearing them then. Okay.
It's stupid. Like, masks in Ubers is really stupid. It's not like, first off, we're both facing forward. It's not like we're like spitballs are traveling back and forth. You're in the front seat. I'm in the back seat. But, you know, crack a window if you're concerned about something. It's not like.
They had those plastic dividers. Like, if this was that deadly, put that back. And that makes sense to me. Like, if this is really your concern, you know, the mask isn't going to do it. You're in an enclosed space for duration. Put the plastic divider. That makes much more sense.
Yeah, I've had that before. Like, I can't even remember. Yeah, I've traveled a decent amount, but it's some hotel where I was, where they had signs up that said, you know, even though the mask mandate has been lifted, we still ask that you wear masks. So to me, that's like, no, I'm not wearing a mask. And if you want to have a problem with me as your customer, you want to say something, come say it to me.
I'm glad you asked. And the answer is no.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a fair request.
And they had at the check-in counter of the hotel, big glass dividers, and the person working there has a mask on. Which, you know, I feel bad that they have to, but then I'm like, I'm not going to have a mask. I mean, come on, plastic divider, you have a mask. I now also have to have a mask on the other side. Like, I think that's plenty.
But I got it. I'll defend the hotels at least, because there you're dealing with people traveling from all over. So if something is going around, you're really playing Russian roulette. You know what I mean? Like, they're the people who are most likely to get something if there's a disease.
Oh, yeah. People from all over the world are coming to Pittsburgh.
They are, though.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess you're right. I don't know. I was just going to shit on that town. Pittsburgh's a great town.
Is that where Jay's from?
No, he's from Philly.
Oh, Philly. Okay, sorry.
But Philly just wasn't quite as good. People do come to Philly. No one's going to Pittsburgh.
Yeah. I like Philly a lot. Yeah.
Philly's a good city. I don't know what it's like now. That's a weird thing about being in the world right now, is that all these cities that I've typically been like, oh yeah, I love that city. Then I go, oh, I wonder what they're like right now. Probably crazy.
Austin is absolutely amazing. I have every day. There's a whole new adventure. It's just really, really great. No part of me misses New York. Like, there's such an energy here, like there was in New York like 15 years ago. Yeah. So it's just really, really exciting. There's also, what we didn't have in New York, a very collegial atmosphere. Like, people are very big on introducing each other and kind of making this community thing. And we're not in competition with each other. You know, Lex is here, Blair White's here, Rucka Ali's here. Tim's here this week, Tim Poole. So everyone's just gets along and just wants to make something awesome happen.
Oh, that's very cool. Have you seen Tim since he's been in town?
Oh, yeah. So I just went out with him last night. And when's this episode going to drop?
Tomorrow.
Okay. I'll off the air, I'll tell you what me and Tim have planned, just to mess with the audience, who I have nothing but contempt for.
Ooh, I like it. Ah, yes. I'm excited to hear what this is.
Yeah.
Tim, so he's been making some news lately. First with the COVID thing. So he got COVID. I reached out. I was texting back and forth with Lydia for a bit after I heard that they got sick. But by the time I heard, it was like a couple days later. And she was like, yeah, we're all better already. So.
I just talked to him last night. It's one of those, like, I've told the story in Rogan, like, once time I was choking in a piece of steak, and it was very interesting because, like, my brain said to me, there is a non-zero chance you're going to die. Like, this is not something, you know, it's not likely, but like, this is not something you can like worry about later. Like, you're really in literal danger right now. And for him, it got worse and worse. And at a certain point, he's like, it's not certain I'm going to survive this. Because when you can't sleep, when you're feverish, when you're delirious, and you can't breathe, and your body's on fire, this is not a good trajectory for any human being. So,
and even just having the thing that everyone's making the thing, you know, like, there's got to be something about that psychologically that fucks with you, no matter who you are, no matter what side of this you're on, when the whole world's been shut down over a virus, and you're like, you have that thing. Yeah,
100%. Yeah. And it's getting worse. So it was scary for him.
Yeah. Well, that's great that things are better. And that he bounced back very quickly, which is, you know, by the numbers expected. So he made a bunch of news by giving Joe Rogan a whole bunch of credit for giving him advice and stuff like that. And then he was trending earlier today, because he had this piece that was really out of character for him, where he was like piping hot angry over what's his name?
James O'Keefe.
Over James O'Keefe having his home raided. But I think he was more angry about the New York Times publishing correspondence between him and his lawyer.
Well, it's not even that. It's the fact that the FBI raided his house, James O'Keefe's, or office, whatever it was, Project Veritas. Mm-hmm. Then they gave information as a result of that raid to the New York Times, while Project Veritas is in litigation with the New York Times. So this is so many degrees removed from what is acceptable in a free society. And Tim, being an independent journalist, whatever anyone thinks about him, it's very clear that if you provoke the powers that be, they, you know, this is the classic, you know, left anarchist argument, that you have the corporate state and you have corporations and government working hand in hand. And there's no better example of, you know, the FBI and the New York Times colluding in a completely depraved way. So why wouldn't they take Tim next? I mean, he's, you know, confrontational and antagonistic, you know, so we can't say Tim Poole is less of a threat than Duncan Lemp was, and they killed him.
Yeah, no, for sure. And yeah, I mean, certainly if you think like, okay, someone like Steve Bannon, someone like, you know, whoever, Alex Jones or someone like that. Well, you're at a point where, I mean, Tim gives them a platform.
Yes.
Not like they give him a platform. He's the guy with the big platform who lets them on.
Yeah.
And so it is really, I'm sure there was a personal element to it also, but there's something interesting about the time we live in where you see these people who like what really stuck out to me about it was that someone like Tim is just not a, and I think this is why it garnered so much attention, is that Tim's not a guy who you think of as being like, you know, white hot mad.
I think I got to tell
but
you,
he was gonna, in that clip.
I'm going to take a little bit of credit for that one.
radicalized him.
You don't, but I have though.
I'm
you don't
sure,
think so?
Yeah. I think you have.
I absolutely have, because I think one of the things that people have gotten to appreciate isn't that like, oh, it's Republican versus Democrat, or like, you know, yeah, we need more cops. Without cops, you have rioting. But sure, cops are corrupt sometimes. Is that there is nothing you can put past these people that in order that they would use to maintain their hold of power. I made this point in Dear Reader, the North Korea book, which is written in Kim Jong-il's voice, which is we're all taught, this is not in dispute, that in 1968, right, the Vietnam War wasn't going well. I've used this example several times. And Lyndon Johnson, when he saw his approval ratings going bad, decided to escalate the war in Vietnam in order to further his reelection career. So what that means is someone's about to lose his job. So he decides, I'm going to kill a lot more Vietnamese people and American soldiers in the process because I'm worried I'll be out of work. And this is just regarded as not like a war crime, but like, well, what are you going to do?
It's politics.
So, yeah, it's politics. It's like, can you just imagine, like, you know, they're going to cut down the number of shows you do per week at gas. And you're like, well, I'm just going to firebomb a village. Like what am I? It's just
I mean, just like take it so much lower than that. You go, so I'm concerned that say like, I'm going to lose some income. So I will ruin my neighbor's life.
Yeah, right.
To keep it.
Yeah.
Like, right away would you be like, whoa, who are you? Like, where is your mentality that you could even think like that? Yeah, I think I think for sure. I think you've had an influence on him. And I think, you know, it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to measure exactly how much of an influence, you know, talking to guys like me and you that we've had on you know, on Tim and on Joe Rogan, on all these people, you know, but it is a great moment when you see them kind of like getting as mad as you think they should get.
Well, you're a dad. You're a dad. Like I've had people who have become red pilled, and I say tongue in cheek, like I feel like a toddler making their first steps, because it's one thing to realize, okay, I'm being systemically lied to. Sure, that's fine. But then you're like, oh, these people know what they're doing and they're truly evil. And like, that is a much bigger red pill. And when you see that like they have no problem, like hurting children to further ends. Like again, over the summer, we just drone strike a bunch of kids and there was no one got fired. No one was like put in jail, to put it mildly. It was just like, well, oops, you know, it was an honest error. It's like, you don't get to do that when you're killing children.
All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Podium. If you own a business, you know there aren't enough hours in the day to waste time playing phone tag. The list of customers you need to reach doesn't get any shorter, especially when business is good. That's why local businesses everywhere turn to Podium. Podium makes every interaction as easy as sending a text. So everything that makes your business great can get done faster. Podium isn't just a better way to communicate. It's a better way to do everything. Gathering reviews, collecting payments, and even marketing to your customers, Podium makes it all as easy as pressing send. You won't just free up more time. You'll grow your business and get more done. With Podium, you're close to deals with customers before the competition ever has a chance to call them back. Join more than 100,000 businesses that have already used Podium to streamline their customer interactions. Get started for free at podium.com/problem or sign up for a paid Podium account and get a free credit card reader. Restrictions apply, but go check it out at podium.com/problem. All right, let's get back into the show.
Yeah, you know, I was saying this on Kennedy, like there's maybe a little over a month ago, but so I was on and they were talking about the story. I don't know if you saw this, but it was the story about the Olympic gymnast coach who was sexually, you know, assaulting like all these young girls.
Is that the one that Simone, what's her name mm-hmm. came out? Okay.
Yes,
yeah. Yeah.
Yes. A horrific story. I mean, this guy must have like, oh my God. I mean, was sexually assaulting teenage girls, you know, and for years and years. And the FBI report, basically it came out that they had completely suppressed the story and that they had all of these girls had come forward and told the FBI about this guy and they had misrepresented what was said, suppressed it. Nothing ended up happening. He went on to abuse dozens more girls before he finally was busted. And this is when that girl went and testified before Congress and was yeah. talking about like how the FBI failed everybody. And, you know, to me, it was like, okay, there is a real difference. This is what I said on Kennedy. I go, there's a real difference between the failure of institutions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the blatant corruption of yeah. institutions. Like it's one thing to fail on that level, you know, yeah. like, to fail, which is still pretty bad. But if you failed to protect, you know, 13, 14, 15 year old girls.
And not just one. It's not like one and she's crazy. Let's ignore her.
No, right. You failed to protect many and allowed many more to be victimized. Then just like the appropriate response in a decent moral society is like, hey, you go up, you beg for forgiveness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You resign. And you go pick up garbage for the rest of your life. You know, right, like, I understand. Right. Okay. Like, I'm not even saying you should be shot publicly. I'm not saying that. I'll settle for, like, just wear a paper bag that says shame yeah. as you pick up garbage on the side of the highway for the rest of your life. But in all seriousness, there should have been mass resignations, a full investigation, like all of these things that if you wanted to try to convince the regular people that I should have some faith in this institution, then that's what should happen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's this level of failure. But of course, none of that happens. No, all of the same people will still be, you know, if they're not still at the FBI, they'll be through the revolving door to some other gig. Maybe they'll right. just be like, you know, a correspondent on MSNBC and be telling you the next, you know, whatever, you know, be talking about the next, how we have to crack down on the January 6th people or something like yeah, yeah. that. But it's like there's so many things like this that are just like, okay, these are real red pilling events. And it's interesting. It's there's been so many more recently than ever. I feel like if in me and your, if in our entire lifetime, there have been like, you know, 20 major red pilling events, like 14 of them have happened in the last 2 years.
Yeah, you know, because I think more and more people are on to the chicanery. And since everyone just needs a camera phone and a Twitter account to make this public, and then it very quickly can go viral. And again, once you spot it, you can't unsee it because it is systemic. It is by design. It is intentional. And it's also shameless. And like you said, like all of these, like there was that when they were talking about that footage of bombing Syria and actually it was actually footage of a gun range in like Kentucky or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
No one got fired. That's the thing. Like if you're a news organization and your word is means something, you're supposed to be trusted and you make some kind of crazy mistake like this, which very clearly was a lie. It's like, all right, this happened with there's an example always is Tylenol, like in the late 70s, early 80s, someone was putting poison in Tylenol bottles, right? People buying Tylenol, they were dying. So what did Tylenol do? They created these like sealed, you know, and whatever jars or like bottles, whatever, they had a huge ad campaign. We're safe. Come back to Tylenol. They owned it and they worked hard to get the public's trust back. But there's never these intentions other than something like CNN putting out commercials that say we tell the truth. If an organization has to tell you that they tell the truth, they aren't.
Yeah. And I think the important point about that, right, that example that you use, is not, and this is the ultimate like anarchist or like market you know, free market like point about that is that it's not that this is because the people at Tylenol are so much more noble
right, than exactly. the people yeah.
in government or in the corporate press or something like that. It's just that, you know, when your customer base is has to voluntarily give you money, you got to convince them
right.
to come back.
Right.
Because if you don't, they won't. However, if your customer base is essentially forced into being your customer and they have no choice of the matter, then you know it creates this natural atrophy where it's like, well, who cares what we do? And this is the weird thing, right? This is the weird thing is like, this is what we have on our side. This is the you know, it's like their strength has become their weakness, where they don't have to compete for our
right.
belief, and therefore they're starting to lose it.
Yeah.
And it's a very strange dynamic where they kind of don't know what to do because they're freaking out, but they don't know how to genuinely win over their constituency, because for so long they've just relied on the fact that, like, well, you don't have a fucking choice.
And they had inertia. They've been around for yeah. decades. Here's another, you know, complete obvious example to red pill people. Polls are all over the map, right? The polls were, you know, often wrong. Some of them are right. You know, whatever. It's hard. Polling is a hard job. If you have an organization, and Quinnipiac is the head of this, if you have an organization that is consistently wrong in its polling, why are you reporting on them? Like, if you want people to trust you, find the poll. It's very easy. Look at the pollsters, see who correlates the best with the election results, report on them because they're reliable, and don't report on the ones who got away off.
Yeah.
But they don't think like that.
Yeah, you would think so. But that's, again, it's this is what's so fascinating about the time we live in. And there's something really exciting about this and, you know, kind of terrifying too. But there's something really exciting about the time we live in because things are so kind of, you know, a little bit out of control. And we're not tethered to these like kind of historical norms anymore. And
right.
it's like, well, what's going to happen here? But there hasn't been a time I could in my lifetime where, you know, right. Like there are so many of these, you know, okay, we're going to report on this poll or we're going to report on this story or we're going to do this. And it was completely wrong. And then, oh, I guess we got to just pretend that didn't happen.
I had a tweet just today on October 25th. I'm going to put the exact quote right here. On October 25th, the headline at The Guardian said the following, longtime Hillary Clinton aide, Huma Abedin, described sexual assault by U.S. senator. That was the headline on October 25th, okay? October 23rd is the same newspaper. Headline is, Huma Abedin says kiss from unnamed senator was not sexual assault. Within 1 week, you had contradictory headlines because you lie. Yeah. And every word they say is a lie, including and in the. And you're right, because how do you regain that trust?
Well, that's what's fun about watching you go on so many of these shows, to bring it back to what we were saying about Tim, you know, and I feel, I hope I've been able to do some of this also,
of course,
is to go on some of these shows with these like big guys who have huge platforms, you know, and who are already kind of questioning things.
Yeah.
And then to be able to go to them, it's like, well, yeah, look, if you're willing to question these things, really look at this. I mean, like, what do you see? What's going on here? Come on. How would you not by any metric judge these people as just, you know, people who you should hold in contempt, in the lowest level of regard? Like, yeah. That who would do this and not feel bad? Like, me and you are, objectively speaking, jerk-offs who fucking have microphones and cameras and talk to people on the internet. And if we got something that wrong on our show, we would feel the need to start our next show by apologizing to everybody. Oh man, I am sorry. I got this so profoundly wrong. And let me tell you why I got it wrong and why I won't get it wrong again. Look, I trusted a guy I never should have trusted and I will not trust him again. And you'd feel the need to do this and they feel no need. Like right. Nothing. I mean, you see, even I don't know if you saw. I you know, forget even the details of the case because I've been talking about this for a few episodes now. But I saw this thing where Anna Kasparian from the Young Turks was on, she just did a thing because now it looks like Kyle Rittenhouse is going to get off, you know, looks pretty, I mean, who knows, but it looks that way. And she does a thing where she does a segment and she goes, look, you know, I may have been wrong about some of this. And after reviewing the videotape, I think he may have been acting in self-defense, yada, yada, yada. And like, then there's people putting these clips together online where she's been trashing this guy for a year. And the videotape was available 15 minutes after he killed the people.
Right.
And you're like, so look at the videotape when it happens or don't comment.
Yeah.
Like, how do you like, you know, and so you just realize that it's like, man, if we, the kind of like internet commentator community, can have that level of integrity, how do these people with like all of this corporate backing and money and all of this, you know, I don't know, they'll just get it that wrong. And then what, we're just going to pretend that never happened.
There was a great supercut from Gravian Media after Rogan had the thing with Dr. Sanjay Gupta on his show.
I remember, yes.
Of all the people saying, Joe Rogan's taking horse paste. And what's fascinating about that is ivermectin isn't just used for horses. It's used for cats. It's used for dogs. And it has other veterinary applications. Why are you all specifically saying horse paste?
Ooh, that's an interesting point.
Because you have a hive mind and you that's the other thing. Yes, it's like,
that is such a good point.
It's not that they're wrong. It's that they're all wrong in the same exact way. Yes. And that's another big red pill. It's like, wait a minute. I get how Anna would get it wrong, or Dave Smith or Michael Malice or CNN. Why are you all getting it wrong in the exact same way?
Yes. Wow. That is such a good point. It's not that you're just all wrong. You're all wrong together.
Yeah.
You're all wrong in the exact same way. Like, why wouldn't one person have gone, it's horse dewormer, and the other one gone, it's cat paste.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other one gone, it's right. dog food. No, it's like, cause you're all just repeating what the last one said.
Right.
And what the last one said is stupid as shit.
Yeah.
So stupid. Yeah. That's a fucking great point.
How could his doctor? I'm not a lawyer, but I'm pretty sure I'm not. You know what I'm saying?
You're a Jew.
I'm a Jew. Yeah,
but right, you got a little bit in you.
This sounds like I'm being sarcastic. I don't think a doctor can prescribe you veterinary medicine. Right. Like, well, if he writes out a script, you can't go to. No, but I mean, like, I don't know the law here, but I don't think you can legally go to Walgreens and say, give me horse medicine.
Dude, the best dude, when Rogan said to what's his name?
Sanjay Gupta.
Gupta. He goes, I can afford people medicine, motherfucker. Yes. And he goes, oh no, I know you can. Blah. And then, you know, there were so many things that were so interesting about, but look, first off, the best meme I saw about this was the meme that it was Joe Rogan and Brian Stelter.
Yeah, yeah.
And Joe Rogan goes, I've been drinking a lot of water lately. And Brian Stelter goes, Joe Rogan ingests formula used as nuclear reactor coolant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So like, yeah. You're like, yes. Okay, right. So that's the point right there, right? Yes, it can be used for these other things. And penicillin can also be used to treat dogs. And lots of medications can also be used on different animals. But the fact is, like, no, he didn't take horse medicine. He took people medicine.
Right.
And it was prescribed by a doctor. But the thing that I
and the other thing is, is it smart to listen to your doctor or not? Because 5 minutes ago, we should trust the experts. So if anyone's an idiot here, it's his doctor, right?
Yes.
Joe did the right thing by listening to his doctor.
And of course, you're like, they'll be like, well, Joe Rogan, not a scientist. But when I had that clip that went viral when I was on Rogan for, you know, when we were questioning the vaccine and everything, and there are a ton of articles. So the clip that I was on with him, I mean, I have nothing to do with me. I just happened to be there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the clip that went, you know, Biden called it out and you know, Fauci called it out, and a whole bunch of people talked about it, that cause it was like, he was questioning whether he basically said, he was like, I would tell a young, healthy person, no, I wouldn't recommend you get vaccinated and all this. And they were like, well, Joe Rogan's not a scientist. And then all these people would point out, was like, well, yeah, neither is Bill Gates.
Yeah.
Neither is Don Lemon. Neither is, like, you know, like all of these people. But so they, you know, you have this kind of like disconnect where it's like, okay, there's a doctor who's telling them to take this.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's why a lot of people are taking this, because doctors are prescribing it. So, okay, why are we not supposed to listen to that doctor, but we are supposed to listen to Don Lemon and Bill Gates and whoever. But the thing actually with Dr. Gupta, that I found the most interesting in that segment was when he asked Joe Rogan specifically if he was going to get vaccinated. And Rogan said no. And he goes, well, I just had it and I beat it. So I have better immunity than the vaccine would give me.
Right.
And Gupta had nothing. He goes, well, yeah, okay, that's a good point. That is
no, didn't he say you should still get, I thought he doubled down and said you should still get vaccinated.
He kind of goes, well, maybe you should still get vaccinated. And Joe was like, why? And he was like, well, you know, I get, like he had nothing to back it up with.
Right.
He had no, there was no argument. And you're like, wow, dude, you're watching people like, you're watching all of these mandates of people ruining people for not doing this. And you, this is all you have? You right. don't have like a, well, here's the really good reason why you still should get vaccinated. Or it to me, that was pretty incredible to see. Like, yeah, they really have nothing.
Yeah.
All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Harry's. You shouldn't have to choose between a great shave and a fair price. And now you don't have to with Harry's. Harry's has the best razors you'll ever use. Let me tell you something. These razors are incredible. I love the Comfort Glide. I love how the handle feels. It's a simple design, sharp German engineered blades, and a low price. That's what you need. If you want a close, comfortable shave, you have to go to harrys.com and right now get the Harry's trial set, and you can get it when you go to harrys.com/problem. Harry's delivers a close, comfortable shave at a fair price, still as low as $2 per blade. Harry's blades are designed to stay sharp. In a recent study, guys who shave 4 times a week said their 8th shave was as smooth as their first. No gimmicks or unnecessary features. The Harry's team combined their weighted ergonomic handle with their signature German-engineered blade cartridge. It's a smart, simple razor designed to deliver a close shave along all the contours of your face. Harry's blades are crafted in their very own German factory, controlling their means of production and focusing on the most important razor features allows Harry's to set reasonable prices again. As low as $2 per blade refill. They have 100% satisfaction guarantee. Harry stands behind the quality of their blades so much that they offer that 100% money back guarantee on everything at harrys.com. Harry's is giving their best offer ever to Part of the Problem listeners. New Harry's customers can redeem a starter set. You get a 5-blade razor, a weighted handle, foaming shave gel with aloe, and a travel cover to protect your blades when they're on the go. That's a $13 value for just $3. There's truly never been a better time to try Harry's. Go to harrys.com/problem to try Harry's today. All right, let's get back into the show. All right, so speaking of shows that that me and you have gotten to go on, and you've, you know, been on a ton of these like really big, you know, kind of high profile alternative shows. But again, even when I say alternative, I don't think that's the right word.
Right.
Because in the same way that you convinced me to stop saying mainstream media, and I really have not said it anymore, it's the corporate press. It's not because it's not mainstream, because actually the shows you're going on are far more mainstream than to be the mainstream. But I got to say, man, the Glenn Beck episode really meant a lot to me.
Oh, thank you. Holy shit.
And I that one, oh God, there was something about it. I thought it was so good. And I've watched a ton of your, you know, obviously, like I've watched a ton of your shows and a ton of your appearances on different things. And I'm always interested to see what you do, whether it's on Lex Friedman or Joe Rogan or, you know, Tim Pool or whatever, you know, other thing you're on. But there was something about the Glenn Beck show that I just thought was so great. If people haven't watched it, go watch Michael Malice on Glenn Beck. It's up on YouTube and probably a bunch of other platforms also. It maybe what meant so much to me about it is that I'm still like my political, coming of age was during the George W. Bush years.
Yeah.
And that was really, you know, everything I am, I think, is a reaction against that time. And that's why I loved Ron Paul so much, because he was the best reaction against the George W. Bush years. And Glenn Beck, this guy, was kind of, I mean, he wasn't the biggest guy at Fox News. Bill O'Reilly was, but he was the heir apparent. He was the next guy to Bill O'Reilly, and he was wrong about everything. You know, like he was, I mean, not wrong about everything, but he was wrong about so many of the most important things. Like he was a champion of the Patriot Act and the war on terror and Islamofascism and falling right in line with all the Republican dogma. But he was also kind of interested in history.
Yeah.
And he was also kind of interested in like, oh, you know, Woodrow Wilson did kind of set us on this progressive path and all of this other stuff. And so it was so interesting to see this moment of you and get together and you attacking him, you know, this anarchist going after this conservative from the conservative, like that you did such a good job, I thought, of being a better conservative than he was as an anarchist. And I don't know. I thought it was like a clinic. It was a beautiful clinic of how to like talk about this shit to someone like him. I don't know. What did you love it? Was it? I thought it was so great.
Well, a couple other things. First of all, and I don't have any way to explain this. That episode of me on Glenn Beck had the highest views of any episode he's done all year, beating Jordan Peterson, beating Tucker Carlson on Glenn Beck, which does not make sense to me, because I would think if someone's a Glenn Beck fan, they'd much rather watch him and Tucker talk for an hour than some Michael Malice, who's a nobody compared to those names, right?
So the only explanation for that is that there was a lot of word of mouth of it.
Yeah, because this was
before, you got to watch this one.
Because even before Rogan, it wasn't a Rogan bump. Even before Rogan, I was doing better than everyone except Tucker. And then after Rogan, it was better than Tucker. So that was really shocking to me. The thing with that episode is they flew me into Dallas to do his show, Sarah Gonzalez's show, The News and Why It Matters, and then Stu Berger's show in the afternoon, The World According to Stu. And I adore Stu, and Sarah's a real treat as well. But I had to wake up early. And when I'm not fully rested, I'm not at my best, like every other human being. So I was going in there. I don't know if I was nervous, but I was like, I didn't know what to expect. And I thought, you know, this could be a lot of ums and me losing my train of thought. So the thing that's very impressive about Glenn, and I'm going to try to get him on my show. I had seen an interview with him, and I think it was Russell Brand. It was someone, I don't remember who it was. And Glenn was talking very pointedly and choosing his words very carefully. And the impression I got, and I'm curious to ask him this when I speak to him, he really, again, this is my impression, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it really seemed like he felt duped and used in terms of the Iraq war. And I know a lot of people who worked for Glenn, so have you. He actually is someone who has a big heart, not like a lot of these people who are like boomer cons for TV and then just cash a check. Like he really is like crazy enough to care about people. And it really came off like he also felt an enormous amount of guilt. And I think a lot of people, I know you and I both have fans who are like ex-military, and they're just like, what did I do? And like, they're still like, my friends died for nothing. Like I totally bought into it. It was complete crap. Like, and this messes with them for a very long time, and understandably, and if there was anything I could do to give them, you know, absolution, I'd be happy to do it. But imagine if you were him, right? And you were one of the big cheerleaders for this, and literally hundreds of thousands of innocent people died. And then it was for nothing, including many American soldiers who died. And, you know, Glenn Beck has enough of heart. He's enough of conscience that all it's going to take is see one photo of a kid, you know, with his dad's coffin draped in the American flag. And you're going to take a second. You're like, I took a wrong turn somewhere really fierce. So I think when you have that bit of humbling, and also, you know, leaving Fox and doing your own thing, you're not as much subject to like the Fox propaganda. Yeah. You also realize, wow, a lot of this stuff is, you know, propaganda manipulation. That's also going to be kind of chastening. So it was a great experience. I didn't remember it. It was much better when I watched it, you know, because when I talk, it's off the cuff, and I'm like, oh, like I really thought I did a good job, but at the time, I didn't really have the kind of stuff. But the thing is, Glenn is not a naturally humorous person. So what I knew I could do is if I had my little zingers in there, I knew it would kind of add value to the episode because then people at home would, even if they disagreed, would at least be entertained by it. And it's always fun when the host is someone who has that much stature in like conservatism, at least when you clown him, there is that element of camaraderie because it shows it's the friendly conversation instead of it being antagonistic.
Sure. Absolutely. The thing that really like stuck out to me about it was how I felt like at every turn, and this is what I think is the best thing, for libertarians, for anarchists, I love when they, you know, this is, as I've said before, it's like the Scott Horton gets credit as the Scott Horton rule of attack the left from the left, attack the right from the right, and all of this stuff. But that at every turn, it was like, you, even though you're coming on here, like, I'm an anarchist. And he was like, well, look, I'm a conservative. And your take is almost like, well, I'm a better conservative than you are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And here's why I'm a better conservative. And here's why I want to go all the way back to repeal Woodrow Wilson.
No, I was saying repeal the Constitution. Yeah.
George Washington. And even George Washington was too progressive for me. You know, and then you realize this thing where he's kind of like, you know, there's this weird thing where people have, especially when people consider themselves like, I'm a big conservative. You know, it's like, so they have these, it's almost like on their left side, they have these fierce muscles.
Yeah.
I'll fight off anyone on my left side. But on the right side, there's just this atrophy. We're like, if you come over here, like, well, I don't know. I mean, I'm supposed to be the guy all the way over here. And so you just come over to there to him and just kind of like push him aside. And you go, wow, that is a really good point. I mean, yeah, I mean, I can't really argue with you that the Constitution isn't worse than the Articles of Confederation or whatever it might be.
It's impossible to be both back the blue and see cops arresting priests who are holding prayer services. As a conservative, these are two values. Conservatives correctly say,
so which one
say,
are you?
Yeah, conservatives correctly say that like religion and social private society and social bonds are what keep countries going. It's not the government. It's that we all have to do our part and kind of keep our community safe and clean, right? So that's the kind of religious aspect. Then you have the cop aspect. It's one of my polls. Which are you going to pick? Is it going to be the cops or is it going to be the preacher who's peacefully having a prayer service? Because you can't have both because they're in conflict in this thing. And when that happens, because in their heads, they're one and the same. These are, you know, you have the priests and the moral people, moral leaders in your community, keeping everyone. But when the people who stray, that's when the cop comes in. Now you have to choose. And they never thought that was possible because their big argument for years is, well, the cops aren't racist. Well, that's not what's on the table right now. We're not talking about the cops' racism. We're talking about the fact that there's no law that would be too obscene for them to enforce. That there was an article in the New York Post a couple of weeks ago where they tackled a guy in a wheelchair, seven of them, to arrest him. You just get your hand. How much money would you have to get paid to do something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's the question. And the question kind of answers itself, which is I wouldn't take any amount of money to do that.
But that's what's also fun, like your point about Scott's point, rather, about when you put it, it's like, how much money would Gretchen Whitmer have to pay you to do these things? They're like, F Gretchen Whitmer, she should be in jail. She's the one ordering the cops. Well, they don't know what to say, but it's true.
That's right. And then what they'll hide behind, which is just the most pathetic, even, and I've noticed this over the last, you know, 18 months or whatever, even right wingers feel so ashamed to go, but they're just following orders from her.
Yeah, right.
Oh, doesn't that just hurt to say? Yeah. Like, doesn't it just destroy your soul? Do you think, are there like, because I've seen at this point, you've gone on like so many of the, you know, of the biggest platforms out there and argued for pure anarchy.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't mean anarchy, you know, in the best sense of the word, the way we mean it. But Jordan Peterson and Rogan and Glenn Beck and Tim Pool and like all these shows. And it seems like it's always kind of, I mean, what are considered right wingers today, you know, who you're going on with. And I wonder, I'm like, that I was thinking about this. I was like, oh, I'd really love to see like you go on, you know, some big, like real left wing platforms. And then I'm wondering, I'm like, well, what platform would I be thinking of? And I don't exactly know. And then I'm like, have you done that? Is there a moment that you think of where there's like a real left winger whose platform you've gone on? that would be like kind of equivalent?
There hasn't been. It would be like probably, I mean, there's two kinds. There's people like Jimmy Dore, but he's like a red pilled leftist.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
there would be places like the Young Turks. It would be, I mean, the difference is this person going to be receptive and interested in having conversation? Or is this person interested in having me there in order to kind of denigrate me and like kind of do like this Morton Downey Jr. thing to just kind of be like, this guy's a loon. We don't have to listen to him.
Either way would be entertaining because you're actually, you're very good at both. You're very good at you'd be more than willing to entertain the Morton Downey Jr. one too and go back at them, I think, if I know you as well as I do.
There's this great Billy Idol quote about like, I love it when people are rude to me so I could stop pretending to be nice. Yeah. So like I am really good, and this is like ego and hubris, which goes for like $500 on eBay now, which is insane. My biography. It's just like, you people are wasting your money. Just pirate it. But growing up, it was me taking on teachers, principals, cops, you know, school administrators, professors, and they're really, really empty suits. Like they have to rely so heavily on their authority that when someone comes and just swings really hard at them, they don't really know what to do. So I'm really good if someone, like I was on somebody's show and they started with me, I'd be very, very good at putting them in their place. And then they don't know what to do because now they're being humiliated in front of their audience. Now their audience is going to hate me and I'm fine with that. But I also, it would take a lot for me to get to that point.
Yeah, but you're also, you're very quick. And that's one of the benefits you have. You're very quick. And one of the things I love about you is that in those situations, you will be ruthless. But I like to think that I'm the same way, that like if somebody is respectful with me and wants to discuss ideas, I'm very happy to do that. But if they want to go like low, you know, it's like, okay, that could be fun too. So
yeah, I'm 4'11". I'm as low as it gets. Like I'm an immigrant. You want to talk like being in the gutter? I'm more than happy to.
But I would be interested to see if there was someone like on the left, like with a big platform. I don't even know. Maybe the Young Turks or something. I don't know. But they seem more into just kind of like the, you know, imitating the corporate press type thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But like who wanted to actually, because I think you could also argue the anarchist position from the left. I mean, it's not as if, like, I know you wrote the book, The New Right and all of that, but look, it's not as if your anarchist position couldn't also be a better leftist than the left.
Well, I actually had this discussion. It wasn't adversarial at all. But Thad Russell, I was just in LA a couple of weeks ago. We filmed an episode of Unregistered, and he was critiquing anarchism from the left anarchism perspective. And I was engaging with him on that. So that's going to drop soon. Yeah.
I'll be interested to see that. So give me like just a couple of the main critiques that Thad had.
Well, I don't really remember them that well, but basically, first of all, he was saying that the left anarchists were correct in that the big issue is the inevitable intermingling of corporate power and state power. And that, I do not have a particular love for corporate America. I think Ayn Rand, this is something she got very wrong, that she basically had big business on a pedestal. Mm-hmm. I think these people do not have any values, and the values they have are a function of the universities, which are beyond redemption. So, I think a lot of things that like, you know, when they were concerned in the late 1800s, the early 1900s with people tend to a room without ventilation or sanitation and kids are starving, I don't think that they're, you know, the same as someone who went to Yale and is complaining about microaggressions. I think the problems that they identified at the time were absolutely legitimate problems, and that they were right to be like, if we have to use force to make sure people have food, we're going to do it. And we're happy to bite that bullet. And I don't think that that's a crazy position.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. And I think that, a lot of the right anarchists, I mean, Ayn Rand was not an anarchist as you know, but I think a lot of the, well, when I say right anarchists, you know, whatever you'd consider Rothbard or, you know, my people, whatever you consider Jews, really, but they, I think, were pretty aware of that too, that it's really the fact that corporate power is in bed with the state. That is really the issue that we face. But I do think that, you know, maybe one of the things like the idea that you just kind of said that the left anarchists have, I've, you know, flirted with this a little bit recently that, yeah, it is possible that at points force is necessary to redirect things back to where a free society would be. All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Bambi. When running a business, HR issues can kill you. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, labor regulations, and HR managers' salaries, they are not cheap. An average of $70,000 a year. Bambi, spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small businesses. You can get a dedicated HR manager, craft HR policy, and maintain your compliance all for just $99 a month. With Bambi, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, email, or real-time chat. From onboarding to termination, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day-to-day, all for just $99 a month. It's month-to-month, there's no hidden fees, and you can cancel anytime. You didn't start your business because you wanted to spend your time on HR compliance. So let Bambi do it for you. Get your free HR audit today. Go to Bambi.com/POTP right now to schedule that free HR audit. That's Bambi.com/POTP. Bambee.com/POTP. All right, let's get back into the show. So I one of the things that was a big debate amongst the libertarian world, the tiny little libertarian world that I dwell in, was whether or not we should be able to support not just banning mandates, but like Governor Abbott, your governor, as a lifelong Texan.
Yes, sir.
Your Governor Abbott and Governor DeSantis talking about banning even private businesses from being able to institute their own, you know, vaccine policies or mask policies or anything like that. And the pure, you know, libertarian anarchist in me would say, well, ideally, there'd be no, you know, federal bans or mandates and no state bans or mandates. Wait, and
let me interrupt you and make this a less radioactive question. Take it 5 years ago. If they had a law that says it's illegal for you to get a drug test for your job, it's illegal for your company to ask for your bodily fluids. I mean, I don't think that that would be that crazy.
Well, sure. I'm not saying it's not that crazy.
Yeah.
But I guess if you really pushed me on it, I would have said 5 years ago that a company has a right to test you. And it, you know, it depends on what the job is. I mean, if you're a kindergarten teacher and they go, look, we want to make sure you don't do heroin or whatever, or so we don't want anyone who does that to be a teacher here. So if you come take this job, you have to agree to that. I would think that, I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to, maybe I could think,
but they never example. But they never tested for just for heroin. They always test for like weed.
Yes.
And all these now other things.
But again, that's my personal feeling is that, yes, I feel that that's silly. But okay, I could still think of examples where I'd understand where they'd want to test.
Sure. Of course. I'm not arguing that either.
So I don't know. Like,
I just remember I went in for a job to either do tech support or software trainer, and they wanted my urine sample. And I'm like, you people meaning corporate America do not understand the concept of boundaries. That is one of the things that the left anarchists really nailed in their books in the early 20th century when their attacks on public schools. They're like, these are just training grounds to get everyone ready to work in a factory and to have no concept of homework is another good example of this. And this is like kind of funny when you bring it up. If your teacher knows how to do their job, why are you getting homework? There's no point for it. It's because you want to get it by intentionally or by accident. You want to get the idea in kids' heads that their home is not there's no sanctity, that you can cross that boundary and infiltrate the home. And the same thing you have with jobs where like, I'm going to need you to stay late today. What the fuck do I care what you need? This is my life.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right about that. So, okay. But I do think that, so to me, this is how I look at it, right? Like this is what I struggle with, I guess, to some degree, is that if you say over the last 18 months, you have the entire cathedral, as you know, a term that was, I think, coined by Curtis Yarvin, but that me and you have used quite a bit. So if you have the entire cathedral pushing this narrative that, okay, there's this, is COVID is the scariest thing ever. And so we have to lock down and we have to have mask mandates. And as we were talking about earlier, then we'll just kind of abandon all of that. Oh, well, who cares about that? But we have to have vaccine mandates and we have to, but even the narrative might be, you know, when Trump's pushing the vaccines, well, the vaccine is dangerous. But then as soon as Joe Biden's pushing it, well, then we have to mandate it.
Right.
All of this stuff and, you know, vaccine passports and, you know, all the rest. And this creates an environment where it's like a lot of companies that never would have required any of this now will.
Yeah.
If there is a local government force that says, fuck that, by force, we are bringing you back to 2019.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if this is, you know, it's like there's a weird thing. It's almost like as if there were government schools that taught kids for 18 years that someone of a different race is inferior to them. And then you got out and the situation in the market was that they're discriminating against this other race. And then you went, no, fuck that. By government force, we're saying you can't.
Yeah.
You can't do that. It's an interesting question for an anarchist. You know,
it's an interesting question.
Could you get on board with, I understand a level of government force to push us back to where we were before this government force brought the needle all the way over here.
Well, it's it's also like, you know, the being an anarchist doesn't mean that all government action is equally evil. Like if you ask me between like the death penalty and traffic cops, this is not a hard choice, which I'd abolish first.
Yes.
And there are certain cases where if you have an evil country invading another one, invading America, let's say, and the army defends us, I don't think that this is, oh my God, this is the government at its worst at all. So if there's a situation where, you know, the federal government is using force to do something it has no right to do, and the state government is using force to not only say, you can't do this, but to also create an air of illegitimacy about the federal government's edicts. That, I think, is much more important than the actual force. It's the demonstration that you're under no compulsion to listen to these jackasses in Washington, which is essentially the basis of anarchism.
Right. And right. That's a great point. And also, I thought, so I was, for a little while, I was saying that I was like, look, these mandates by state governments are unnecessary and that they don't need to do them. They should just say, we'll have no mandates in this state whatsoever. But it changed when Joe Biden did the whole thing where he's like, he's using OSHA to come in and say any company with 100 employees or more has to, you know, test or mandate. And then you're like, well, what about big companies that are in Texas?
Yeah.
If Governor Abbott just says, well, we don't care, we're not following any of that, then they go, okay, but the federal government is telling you this. And so if he goes, no, we mandate you don't follow the federal government's edicts, then this company's in the position of deciding, are we with Texas or with the federal government? You almost need a state government to be in stark opposition to the federal government in order to create this tension where it's like, you know, like California, where like weed's legal and the government's like, no, it's illegal. And they're like, okay, well, who do you want to be with?
Yeah.
And then you have to kind of like create this situation where then these companies can really figure out what the market demands. Like, oh, okay.
Who? And the other thing, this was Uber's model. In many cities, Uber went in before they had a chance to make illegal, and they got enough of a market share that after a certain point, they couldn't ban it and they didn't know what to do. So because the market works so much faster than the state.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So I guess maybe that's what we can hope for. Do you see, how do you feel like, and we'll get out of here in a sec. You know, we haven't talked in a little bit. We were doing regular episodes for quite a while, and it's been on, you know, because I've been going through a lot of shit. But the whole white pill mentality.
Yeah.
Has anything like shaken you on that? Or do you still feel like, man, this is like fucking, I'm really optimistic about the future. I don't know how to feel. Like I kind of go back and forth. Like I've said before, I feel like I have no option because I have kids.
But I am very optimistic for several reasons. First of all, there is an enormous amount of contempt for the corporate press. It wasn't after the election that everyone started attacking Biden. There's like an understanding across the political aisle that Biden is just basically a dead man walking, right? So I remember very vividly the contempt for Obama from conservatives, you know, and the contempt for George W. Bush from the left. It's not the same for Biden. He's regarded as kind of a joke. And Kamala Harris, you know, is even, her approval rating is at 28%. I had told you a year ago that Kamala Harris would have a 28% approval rating, you would say that's impossible. Maybe not you personally, Dave, because there's going to be at least a floor of people who are happy that we have a biracial first woman vice president. And that has been demonstrated to me. And the thing is, she hasn't been even doing anything.
Even me personally, I'd be surprised. But
yeah, I'm surprised, 28%. But even that is neither here nor there. The point being, there is so much contempt for the political class. Before you kind of defeat these people, you have to have people realize that they're the enemy. Like, that's the big issue. And I think increasingly, if you saw polls, respect for corporate media has reached an all-time low. Cenk Uygur, if that's how you pronounce his name, I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing it correctly, for the Young Turks, just had a poll where he said, which has done more to hurt America, right-wing media or corporate media? So the fact that already it's been identified as an outlet of corporate America is an enormous step forward. I don't think this is a reversible trend, that once you realize this is basically commercials for corporate America, it's a very different lens to view things at. I think, again, if they had their druthers, we'd all be in lockdowns. They don't have that capacity. That fact that these governors who are sociopaths of their own are using this as an issue to leverage is wonderful. And I think the fact that, you know, Germany right now, which had very strong mandates, very strong lockdowns, is having record numbers of COVID, means the narrative is falling apart. And I think in many parts of the country, and I'm sorry, it's not yours, people are just pretending or don't care about it anymore. It's very hard to maintain this storyline, for better or for worse, for an extended period of time. And I think the Virginia thing, here's the other one. Like, if the fact that they've turned suburban white women against the left in such record numbers in this quickly with the CRTV, I don't care where you stand politically. I don't care. You can't go on TikTok and watch these teachers and expressing themselves honestly and say, this is someone who I want raising my kids. It's not possible. Because how it works is you have the people in The View, you have the women at Good Morning America, you know, they'll present these kind of hard left, Katie Couric, you know, progressive ideas with a smile on their face and sanity. You're like, oh, okay. They're just teaching them we shouldn't be prejudiced. I believe that. I think it's important for my daughter to learn. Then you see what your daughter is being taught. Then you see who's teaching it. And you're like, oh, I want to run away screaming, and these people are lying to me. That's the key. I had James Lindsay on my show a couple weeks ago. It's not that they're as much offended as what they're teaching the kids, is that they're being lied to their face and saying, we're not teaching the kids this. So it's like, I'm not having a conversation. And the thing is, I'm sure you've seen with Corey DeAngelis, state after state has now left the National School Board Association. And the number of homeschooling kids is growing exponentially. It's like the hockey stick that Al Gore talked about, global warming. If you have 10% or 15% of American kids being homeschooled, the cathedral is done. That's all it takes.
Yeah. No, I think that's right.
So how could I not be hopeful? Like, honestly, if everyone listening to this and you and I, if you sat down and said, what would be the best way to save America if you could do one thing other than like abolishing the federal government, I would say getting kids out of government schools. That would be my one thing. And that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And that also, you know, it like that makes sense being coupled with the corporate press freaking out more than ever and, you know, being more hysterical than ever. And I've been saying this for a while before COVID that it, like there's something positive about that sign.
Yes.
That they're freaking out so much. They wouldn't be freaking out if they knew they had a grip on their power. They're freaking out because they're concerned they're losing their grip on power.
Right.
And I think you're right. And I think also that, you know, the idea of looking at some of these teachers and seeing what they're teaching their kids, you know, the Biden administration, when they did that whole thing where they called parents terrorists
yeah.
for coming to these meetings, you know, they're not completely wrong. Like I get in a weird way from their perspective, what they're saying, because there is something about like, even someone like me, you know, I believe passionately in all the shit I believe in. And I'm as anti-war and as anti-government, as anti-tax as pretty much anyone could be.
As Senator Romney. Yeah.
As at least as much as the great Senator Mitt Romney. But if you tell me you're going to propagandize my kids.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm ready to be exactly what you're calling those yeah. parents. So it's not, you know, you're not completely wrong. Like there's something to that.
I was talking to Camille. There's that book by Ibram Kendi, if that's his name, called Anti-Racist Baby. And Camille said, if you gave that to my kid, I might actually inflict violence on you.
Yeah.
So if on one hand you're saying we're not teaching them, it's like this book's on the shelves. Who's yeah. reading anti-racist babies? Old ladies?
Exactly. And there are some things in this world that you're like, oh, that's actually worth dying over.
Yeah.
Like I'll actually die for that.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that is the thing that I think is the real white pill. And yes, there are all of these things like, you know, the vaccine passports and these kind of like plans of different, you know, governments. I know Austria is going to lock down their unvaccinated or all that. But there is something, there's a flip side to it, which is that there is there's a coming apart.
Yeah.
That I think is really excellent.
And they talk about it constantly. Like we can't talk to each other anymore. No one's listening mm-hmm. to us. Yeah. And it's going to get worse. And I love yeah. every minute of it.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. I think that's exactly right. All right. Well, dude, it was great to talk to you again, man. I miss you.
I miss you.
I'm so happy that you're fucking loving it out there in Austin. And I can't, next time I'm out there, we're going to hang.
Oh, I'm busy that night.
You son of a bitch.
You are welcome.
bastard. He got me. All right. We're putting this up on his feed.
Damn it.
I just lost my ad revenue for this whole show.
Sorry, right. Blue Chew.
All right. I love you, brother. And I'll talk to you soon.
Talk soon,
thank you for everyone listening. Peace.